The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
So how are you doing today there, former Governor Schaefer?
Doing well, thank you.
Here at Caribou Coffee in Fargo, North Dakota. And what are you doing these days? Let's start with that. Where you're at, of course, former Governor of North Dakota, most known person for working with oil companies, kind of bringing the oil companies to North Dakota. But since then, what have you been doing?
Well, you know, it's always busy times, and there's so much to do, Jason. There's you never have to worry about filling up the calendar. But I am such a fortunate recipient of North Dakota's wonder and natural resources. I get to work in the energy and agriculture fields, and I travel around the world speaking on energy and agriculture policy. I'm serving on some corporate boards. I have a couple of environmental and preservation projects going on out in the East Coast, like the Chesapeake Bay Watershed Cleanup Project and things like that. Plus, now I'm getting involved with a governor's group on pursuing funding for the National Transportation Trust Fund, which seems to be running out of money like everything else. And, you know, the importance of infrastructure development in states is a big deal, and we're engaging governors in that effort to bring funding to the Highway Trust Fund.
And you served as Ag Secretary for the United States under George Bush?
Yes, I was the Secretary of Agriculture, USDA, at the end of the George W. Bush administration.
The reason I bring that up is you're well known for ag as well, and as you're becoming very known as for energy. But the event down in South Dakota with the cattle, this is side
yes,
here,
sure.
But we are out in Belle Fourche, we are out in Sundance, Wyoming. At what point does that become a federal emergency? Because here in North Dakota, we have flooding and we get federal emergency dollars all the time. That cattle situation seems like a pretty severe situation.
It is a severe situation, and it's a tough one. We went through that in 1997-1998 winter in North Dakota, where we had many, many, many cattle die, and it's just this mass die-off. It's a very difficult issue. The process of getting the federal emergency declaration is an application from the state. There has to be a survey done, and there's a percentage of damage to the I don't know what the measurement is. There's a percentage of damage to the population or the county or, you know, the amount of economic activity or something. There's a threshold, and if you meet that threshold, not something you want to do, you know, but if you meet that threshold by the amount of damage that takes place, and you have to assess that damage in a certain way, then the federal government can declare, you apply to the president to declare a federal emergency. And the federal emergency then allows you access to federal funds, small business loans for recovery, certain loans and grants for reclamation and things like that.
And so I apologize for the Building the Bakken listeners. Just didn't want to let that opportunity escape when we have the former Ag Secretary here on the program. Pad drilling. Let's transition back into energy for a second. Pad drilling has really changed energy exploration. Recently, I was reading, I believe it was Continental, decreased from $13.9 down to $8.3 million per drill pad. That's incredible savings. And of course, corporations, when they allocate money to spend in a state, they're going to do that. So when we see those savings happening, of course, that's more money for the state and it helps for the economy. What are you hearing on pad drilling?
Well, pad drilling is great. Continental Resources calls them echo pads, and they are echo pads. They are, you know, you look at the, you know, ecology of extraction and the opportunity to shift now as we shift in the Bakken from the discovery phase into the operational phase. Now that the mineral rights have been secured, the borders have been outlined. Now you go in and say, oh, how can we be more efficient? How can you do better? What can we do? And I, you know, the energy industry often gets a real bad rap on the environment and things. And I like to point out that the Minneapolis Fed Board took all their people out to the Bakken a few months ago, and they were kind of like blown away at the attention to safety and environment that the oil companies do. And those echo pads, or the pad drilling, you know, allows you to put a number of holes, and in some cases, you know, more than 10 in the same spot. So you reduce the truck traffic, you have less holes in the ground. I guess you have the same number of holes in the ground, but they're all in one spot. But the in and out traffic, the opportunity to have one environmental impact on one pad versus spreading 10 wells out over the countryside, you know, those kinds of things have made a huge difference. And it also, as you mentioned, allows the oil companies to reduce the cost of drilling. Some of that reduction is coming from just now as you get into the operational phase, things slow down a little bit, you start paying more attention to cost, you start, you know, pushing down on things that you really care about or couldn't care about before because it was just the activity was so strong. But the eco pads are, you know, reduced cost, better for the environment, and really better production for the companies. So, you know, it's really a good way to go.
Extraction tax. Let's talk about that for a second. You led a campaign a number of years ago educating the public about the extraction tax in North Dakota. It went to a vote, I believe, with the legislature, or it didn't make it through the session. That's what it was. It's coming up again. And I want to ask you something, because I had a conversation with an executive for an oil company. And he brought something to my attention that if the price of oil drops to a certain dollar, the taxes are on a tiered system. Can you comment on that at all?
Sure. In North Dakota, because our extraction costs are high, the oil's deep, and you know, we recognize that that the costs of getting that oil out of the ground are more than other states. We have a trigger mechanism. When the price of oil drops to a certain level, the extraction tax will also drop to try to keep, you know, to keep that activity moving, to keep things, keep that oil pumping, because at a certain price point, oil companies say, hey, you know, it's not economically viable to produce this oil in North Dakota. So they, you know, they cap the wells and they quit drilling. And, you know, then we're sitting there with a huge resource that we can't tap into.
Because they hold it underground. What better place to store it than the ground?
And once you discover a well, you put that asset, you what you call prove the well, and it's an IRS term, but you prove the well, you put the asset on your balance sheet, and you can borrow against that money.
Oh.
I mean, you borrow against that asset, and then you go drill your next well.
Sure.
You know, so it's a way, and especially with the independent folks, it's a way that you capitalize, the way you raise the funds to be able to explore and produce the oil that's in the ground. So that tax element's important, and North Dakota does have a trigger mechanism that lowers the tax when the oil gets below a certain price.
If the price of oil were to go down and that trigger point were to happen, say in the next year, just throw this out there for hypothetical, what would happen with the state's treasury? Because there's a lot of dollars committed to a lot of towns, albeit Fargo, Bismarck, Dickinson, Williston. I don't know if these conversations are being had. I don't know if people are running away from this conversation. But when the one I had with the oil executive was real, and it got me thinking that, you know, Dickinson's $100 million in debt, and they're expecting $43 million from the state. What would happen if those triggers, you know, do you see what I mean?
Yeah, well, I do see what you mean. I think when you look at that, the production situation in North Dakota, we're in better shape than when this happened to us in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in 1979, the price of oil peaked and the production in North Dakota virtually stopped. And when that happened, a lot of communities got caught with infrastructure that they developed and now couldn't pay for it. And it was a very, you know, property taxes for 10 years in Williston went backwards to pay for investments they already made instead of going forward to invest in your community to grow. You know, it was a very difficult situation. We are a little tempered with that this time around, because now as we push 1 million barrels of production per day, if the costs go down, if the price goes down, you may not see the drilling activity, but it's unlikely that the production activity will slow. So, you know, they're not going to go in and cap a well In the 70s, they went and capped wells because the price was so bad, $10 a barrel and less in some cases. So, you just couldn't afford to take it out, so they capped it. But now we have the capacity and the volumes in North Dakota to where it's unlikely, unless you get back down to that $10 a barrel oil, which you always can. But
we were there five years ago.
Well, we were there less than 5 years ago.
I mean, think about that, though. Five years ago, nobody was predicting $100 oil, and $100 oil came, and that allowed a lot of this activity to happen.
In 2009... the commodity prices of oil were just in the tank.
Right.
And they it's a volatile industry. It's a law of supply and demand. It goes up and down, and that's kind of what you worry about getting trapped with. And
that's why we're having this conversation. Right. Yeah.
And one of my concerns is that we have built such a dependence on revenue from the oil industry. 35% of our budget, our state budget, comes from oil revenues. And not only oil revenues, but the oil activity produces sales tax, vehicle tax, mm-hmm. license fees, all these kinds of things. And huge amounts of dollars are coming into our budgets. And should that oil activity slow or stop, we have a problem. We did it. We've overbuilt our government in the 1970s. We got hit in the 80s, both with agriculture and energy, on a down cycle of the economy. It hurt our state for 10 years to be able to, kind of get out of the mess here and get the budgets back in shape and get the state moving. We could do that again. I mean, we have to be very careful not to get so far out here on oil revenues that when they do the always cyclical nature of the business, when they get into those down cycles, we don't want to have to shut down our government.
Jack Ekstrom, are you familiar with that name?
I know Jack.
Jack Ekstrom was part of a panel at the North Dakota Oil and Gas Producing Counties annual meeting in Dickinson with a number of oil executives, and Jim Arthad from MBI moderated it. And from that meeting, there was a story that came out of there incorrectly about how Jack Ekstrom said he wanted the extraction tax cut in half, or they were going to leave and go to Colorado. Were you familiar with that story?
Yes.
Okay. I was at that meeting. That was the furthest from the truth. Jack was talking about how North Dakota has one of the higher extraction taxes in the United States. True or false?
True.
And what he said was, from what I heard, if the public doesn't see the investment being done in the infrastructure, they're going to get upset. And also, we know you have some wiggle room, whereas Colorado's starting to look more appealing every day. What do you make of my analysis on that meeting in comparison to Whiting VP wants oil extraction tax cut in half?
Well, there are a number of elements in that question that need to be addressed. First of all, the infrastructure, in the western counties or in the oil impact counties, is tremendous. The state legislature put $2.5 billion into infrastructure development in western North Dakota. That's more money than they can spend. Mm-hmm. You can't get the equipment and the workers and the inputs and the gravel and the asphalt to do the things that they need to do. So they have more money than they're able to do. The reality is we're playing a catch-up game. We were behind the curve as the production accelerated so rapidly. And one of the things we have to remember now is as we move out of the discovery phase into the operational phase, things calm down, the activity level lessens, pipes go in, so you lessen the truck traffic, all the potholes and the bypasses and all that kind of stuff get put back in place, because you can't. We're starting to catch up on that. And I think one of the problems that we have is the western counties are kind of not seeing that bell curve of activity right now. They're thinking that the activity is going to straight line going up, and they'll never get caught up. So they're panicking mm-hmm. and saying, we don't have enough money. The reality is, the citizens of North Dakota through the legislative process have supported those counties hugely in infrastructure development. And now the communities get a chance to catch up. And it's kind of like, well, we have to hold our breath until we get there, but we're going to get there. Mm-hmm. And so that's an important message that Western North Dakotans and really our whole state needs to understand, that we're not letting those counties dangle out there. They're not just being, you know, thrown to the wolves and let production of oil go and be damned. This is important investment and it's happening.
So in your opinion, the amount of investment with the tax dollars being put into building of infrastructure is pretty good. I mean, you feel okay with that?
Well, you never have enough money, right?
I mean,
you know, nobody has your end there, yeah. Especially when you're dealing with government revenues, you always want more, mm-hmm. right? But if you look at part of the extraction tax goes directly back to the counties. Mm-hmm. Another part of it goes into the state coffers and is allocated by the legislature back to the impacted counties. They have their own revenue sources. So, you know, there are, again, the local control over the amount of money being spent and the priorities on which they're spending it now is an important mm-hmm. issue. And the priorities right now should be infrastructure, impact things. You know, I kind of wonder, Williston's building this huge, huge civic center, and you know, is that a priority versus, you know, fixing their roads and bridges, or you know, what's
$70 million?
Well, it's, you know, it's the biggest one in the state, but
I mean, you know, realistically, yeah. That's $70 million going yeah. into a community, and it's going into one building. Is that a viable investment? That's a fair question.
And I think the point is, if you look at, you're never going to have enough money. You're never going to have all the money in the world. So you've got money coming in. What are your priorities? You know, what are the priorities of a community? If you can't have it all, let's do the most important things first mm-hmm. instead of trying to do it all and then saying we don't have enough money. You know, and I think that those are the important movements that we're going to see in Western North Dakota now. And local officials, mayors and county commissioners and city commissioners are going to have to start saying, we have to set priorities here. We have to figure out how to pay for them. And certainly, you know, we're bonding all this stuff. We have to remember, in a cyclical industry, that we can't get caught with a downturn in the economy in our community and then not be able to pay for the bonding and the things that we're doing right now.
So let's talk about the downturn for just a second. Are we setting up small business owners in North Dakota right now with the investment we're putting? What I mean is, NDSU has a catering department and they compete with local catering companies. Dickinson's talking about selling more water to oil companies. Last year on my program, I had an officer on from the reclamation department, and they were talking about selling water from Patterson Lake to the oil companies. How much of government's going to compete with small business? I guess I'll be very blunt with you about that, because you know, you mentioned $70 million infrastructure in Williston. They got to keep that going after they build it. So are we setting up small businesses here?
Well, unfortunately, when you have a whole lot of money, Jason, people sit around and try to figure out how to spend it. You know, you take care of the needs, mm-hmm. and then you say, okay, well, we have some left over. How can we spend it? And legislature's efforts are to solve problems. I mean, they've got a problem in a community. They worry about it. They say, we have some tax dollars here. How can we use those to solve problems? As you have too much money in a bag, often legislators and governors, you know, will say, well, let's solve the problem with tax money. And sometimes that problem should be solved with the private sector. But instead of encouraging the private sector, we put tax dollars in. And one of the perfect examples where I think the state of North Dakota is making a mistake and competing with the private sector is in what you just mentioned, the water delivery. You know, we've allowed the setup of the Western Area Water Supply Project, which is clearly in competition with the private sector. And you allow people to have, you know, grants, no taxes, low interest loans, not people, but communities that can build a water supply project for, what, a third of the price that the private sector can do it, and then go in and compete with them? Well, that just isn't right. Our country, our state, you know, we're built on private sector investments with government encouragement. If we start getting into, let's have government run the businesses, let's have government compete, I think it sets us up for a big problem in the future.
Final question for you here. I appreciate the time today. Former Governor Ed Schaefer of North Dakota, currently a Continental Resource Board member. Is that the correct way to phrase it?
I sit on the Board of Directors of Continental Resources.
And the Tyler. Let's talk about the Tyler. Two questions, sorry. First one is states' rights and the role of an EPA in this energy boom. And then the Tyler, if there's any update on Continental and the Tyler.
Yeah, and then we should also get back to the tax.
The tax, too, yes.
Because we skip that.
Oh, you have time?
Yeah.
Oh,
what
okay, great.
What time is it?
Well, it's...
we're good.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure we're about...
Yeah, we're 9:30. Okay. We're okay.
Let's do the tax, then. Let's continue with the tax, then, and then we'll get to that. So,
well, you mentioned the impact of what our extraction tax is, and oil company representatives out there saying our taxes are high, as you know, the highest in the lower 48 states. I think the important thing to look at there is how we started this play in North Dakota. In mid 1990s, you could see the Bakken start to develop. And all of the drilling, all of the activity was in Saskatchewan, not in North Dakota. We had one rig drilling in North Dakota because it was more expensive to operate here. Not that the tax level was right or this and that. When you started looking at where do you develop, it was more expensive here. So we, in looking at that, lowered the extraction tax. The legislators, the governor being me, pursued the lowering of extraction taxes in North Dakota for the new technology of horizontal drilling. And horizontal drilling what unlocked the potential of the natural resources in the Bakken play. And so we proved that lowering the taxes at the time caused the shift of activity to move into North Dakota that was across our borders previously. So if you look at that and say, okay, the cost of extracting that oil is an important factor in where people drill, then you have to recognize that, now our technology that we've developed in North Dakota, which was marrying the hydraulic fracturing with horizontal drilling, is being used in Texas and Oklahoma and Colorado and Wyoming, some places in California. And
foreign countries, too.
Foreign countries too. They're really not going to be competitive with us, though. However, on a tax basis, so but Colorado is, Wyoming is, and if you own the mineral rights and you've got a 25-year stream on those, and you don't have to drill a well there, why would you if it costs you more?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the beginning, in the discovery phase, you do because you have to get that well drilled, you have to secure the mineral rights, but once they're secured, you have no need to drill for that oil in that mineral right patch. So instead of drilling the second and third and fifth well on that same area in that same pressure field, you drill it in Montana or you drill it in Wyoming, and then 15 years later you can come back and get it out of North Dakota. So you're going to, the capitalistic system, the law of supply and demand, you're going to say, I'm going to drill where I have the least cost. And if you look at the drilling activity in the Eagle Ford play in Texas, we have twice as many rigs drilling down there than in North Dakota right now. If you look at the new activity that's going in, it's going in central Oklahoma. It's going, Colorado's kind of peaked out a little bit, but you're starting to, of course, see Montana now, pick up in the Bakken and some areas in Wyoming. So I just think we just need to be careful there because we have higher costs and we must remain competitive. Not today. Not tomorrow, but in 2015 or 2016 or somewhere along that line, if we're not competitive, we'll start to see a lowering of activity. And we've had previous comments here about how lowering of economic activity through the energy can really hurt North Dakota, our communities, and our state.
I'm seeing signs right now. I went down to Belle Fourche, and I don't know if you've been down there, but they're right in the center of this whole energy boom because they've got I-90 and they've got Highway 85 and 212. They get 9,000 vehicles a day going through this little intersection because it's on the way to Cheyenne, Wyoming, or Gillette. And Gillette's like an energy boom town.
Right.
But I'm seeing Permian tanks set up shop there. And now I'm starting to see tanks sitting outside at Fargo tanks, which didn't happen before. It's almost like they're setting up kind of that middle area in case of the Colorado play. And these new pad drilling, They're paid for in 18 months, is my understanding, and they can take them down and set them up in 4 days. That's how efficient the oil industry's gotten. So I do think there's some legitimacy right now, and it's not a threat as much as, hey guys, listen to what we're saying. I don't know. That's what I think is coming out of the oil companies. It's not a threat like it's being framed in the media.
No, it's people are always threatened if you say, oh, you have to lower the big bad oil companies' taxes because they're rich and they make all this kind of money and this and that. The reality is, they're going to extract our mineral resources where they can do it the most efficiently and the least cost manner. And we just have to be aware of that in North Dakota because, oil companies work 3-5 years out. You know, they're securing mineral rights. They're moving rigs. They're getting capital. They're planning on where they're going to start punching holes. Not today, not tomorrow. 3 years from now, 5 years from now. And in North Dakota, if we're not going to be competitive 3 and 5 years from now, why would you drill there?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you? You don't have to. And, you know, the reality is you have a declining reservoir. You drill a hole, 85% of that oil production disappears in the first 3 years, and then it settles down to a manageable production level for the next 20. But if you don't keep drilling holes, you can't keep the production up because of the declines. Well, if you don't keep drilling holes, we don't keep revenue in North Dakota. We can't feed the cost of our government through energy. And we just, I believe we ought to be aware of our extraction taxes. It worked in the 90s for us to lower that, to create activity. There'll come a time in North Dakota where we're going to have to create activity by lowering the cost of doing business in North Dakota. We recognize that already by having a trigger point if the prices go down. But what we're not recognizing is the competitive aspect of other oil plays around our country. And we just need to put that on the table.
You mentioned Canada, and there's a prime example. I was talking with Target Logistics, and they get like subsidies in Canada that they're welcomed in with open arms for this type of crew camp housing. Whereas in North Dakota, they're kicking them out and there's regulations here. I mean, it was an example he gave of the two point of views when it comes to energy exploration and energy production. And they wondered why the United States hasn't gotten on board with that, if that makes sense. Because of the jolt in the economy it can give, and if spent wisely, you can really, like what Dickinson's done with their infrastructure. They have 5 lanes now going out of town. It's like a comfort cruise lane going out of there, man. I mean, I've never experienced anything like that before. But what do you want people to remember about the extraction tax? Because when it first came about, I did think it was oil companies looking for more money. And then I kind of did some research, and of course, I'm a writer as well, so it helps for me for research reasons. But I realized this is real. This is legit. And they're not trying to be the big bad wolf. They're trying to be the town crier. They're trying to be on a soapbox saying, listen, guys, this is real. You need to understand that there's a competition out there, and we've become more efficient with how we're doing things. I don't know. I just, what do you want people to remember?
Well, I would like people to remember that we jump started the energy industry in North Dakota in the 1990s by lowering extraction tax so that we lowered the costs of that drilling so that activity, mineral right purchases, capital raise, equipment moves started to come into the state, and we started to see that activity go. As that activity started to move, that's great. We started getting revenues in, and we started to spend our revenues, and it's really benefited the whole state. I mean, we're sitting in Fargo right here now, and oil extraction tax is buying down property taxes right here in Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the whole state has benefited from this thing, and rightfully so. People say, get it while you can, take the money. You should raise the taxes so you get more, those kinds of things. The reality is, in the private sector marketplaces in the United States of America, the foundation of this country and the foundation of the economy in North Dakota, it's a competitive, investment in where you can make the most money to satisfy your shareholders, your bankers, your owners, and your suppliers and all those kinds of things that we want to do. So, you know, you take care of your employees by making money. Mm-hmm. And so we need to remember that we need to remain competitive. That, you know, we're not saying, boy, we should just give the oil companies more money. How do you handle this whole thing? The reality is, at some point in time, if, as we saw in the 90s, the activity was across the border and we could do something about it to get it inside our border, we have to take that into consideration and say, do we want to be competitive? Do we want the activity here? We proved it works in the 90s. It'll work again the other way if we're not careful. So, you know, let's be careful about that. The other thing I think it's important to remember is that oil companies are making plans 3 to 5 years from now, not today. And so we have to anticipate when this shift of competitiveness comes so that we're not sitting there and saying, oh, well, we have to do it. You know, we've lost our revenues. And by the way, we've got to put it back in place today because it doesn't come back at the snap of a finger. Legislature can't lower the extraction tax and expect the next month to see activity increase. It is years out before you can generate the opportunity to bring that business back. So, you know, let's be aware of the competitive situation. And let's remember that we have to, you know, it's kind of like when you're shooting ducks, you shoot ahead of them. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't shoot them, you shoot ahead of them. And you know, we have to make sure that we're out ahead of this thing as we look at the extraction tax costs for North Dakota, because we could get caught in a situation where we have a dip in revenues that could hurt us.
You know what I love about this energy boom, and I've done some research, and it's like with most energy booms, It's an inventor's backyard paradise. I mean, they come up with some new flange system, for example, that's piping, I guess. They can be an overnight millionaire because an oil company will put it on all their rigs overnight if it works out. It makes their business more efficient. There's a lot of that going on where you know, oil, say somebody's working for Marathon Oil. There you go, one of your competitors. And he's taking a look at this pipe every day, and he looks at it, and he goes to his boss, and his boss says, well, I want you to design something. He goes out, gets a patent. Next thing you know, this guy's doing business with Marathon as a rep now, as an inventor. That's happening a lot, isn't it?
Every day I get the opportunity to see, you know, some kind of a new project, new company, new way of doing business, new technology. And it's in all areas, like mm-hmm. you said. You know, it could be a flange on a pipe. It could be the way you measure something, the way you distribute something, the way you seal something. You know, it's just, it's amazing. And it is an inventor's paradise. And the economic activity is what creates that. If you know, it's the not only extraction of the natural resources, it's the extraction of the money. It's mm-hmm. the extraction of the economics that people say, you know, if I could sell 52 of these things, I can make some money, and that economic activity is what allows you to invent those new products, to get them tested and built, and get them out there and get them sold. You know, it's providing tremendous opportunity in North Dakota for new companies, for new ideas, for new technology. I tell you,
some of the inventions are neat as far as pulling metal out of pipes with magnetic blankets around pipes. I mean, something as simple as that.
Every day it's just like, wow, that is really a cool idea, you know?
Then you also are seeing a lot of innovation in flaring happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, we just had the Alliance Pipeline open up. Hess is scheduled to come on board in the next several months and to satisfy some of those natural gas flaring problems. Where's Continental with natural gas these days? What do you make of that? Because that's Tony Clark calls that the next wild card in the Bakken. And you talk about volatility. Natural gas could spike up to $6-7 next week, and we could see a natural gas renaissance out in the Bakken. So what are you guys doing there?
Yeah, first of all, natural gas is not going to spike up. You know, the supply that's out there versus the demand is such to where we see $3, mm-hmm. Three to even a little less in some places, and then that's going to stay around for a while. The prices are inching up if you look at the forward hedging. on sale prices and gas and things. Over the next few years, you're going to see a little bump in prices, but nothing dramatic. And but importantly, you know, Continental Resources, to answer your question, is an oil company. You know, the vast amount of our efforts and investments and capital expenditures go to extract oil.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the gas play that we have at Continental comes from oil mm-hmm. discoveries and the liquids that are in gases, et cetera. But, you know, the innovation is amazing because, you know, there now today are all kinds of companies that are working on, you know, how can you manage the natural gas on site? How can you extract the liquids on site and, you know, and just ship the gas and things that are really happening. Continental, as a matter of fact, where North Dakota on average extracts or flares about 30% of the gas, Continental flares 10. And they've done it by innovative ways of figuring out how to, you know, how to move that gas, how to store it, how to get it to the processors. But importantly, Continental's done it by making commitments to the pipeline companies so that they know they've got a revenue stream to invest in pipes and collectors and tanks to get that gas moved. So, you know, importantly, North Dakota's finding ways to reduce that flaring. It's important for us to do. The legislature's put some incentive to do so in, but the company's economic incentives are really what is pushing our efforts to collect that gas and to recognize the economic value.
So what's Continental's future? What are you guys looking at here?
Well, Continental, you know, our plans are to triple the size of the production in 5 years. And
that's like the best sound bite I've ever heard in my life.
You know, it's pretty amazing. The company is growing rapidly. You know, really the amount of mineral rights that are owned by Continental across this country in proven oil and gas plays are tremendous. We're fighting every day to figure out how can we raise the capital to realize the usage of those mineral rights. And, you know, you get capital constrained because there's so much opportunity. You just don't have the money to be able to explore and extract all of the natural resources that are out there. But, you know, we've mapped out a way to triple the size of the company and plan
on
doing it. Yeah, plan on doing that.
So you're serious about tripling the size of the company. Oh, okay. Well, good luck with that. Well, Tyler, anything with the Tyler? You know, are you guys doing anything?
Yeah, I love the Tyler play. You know, first of all, the Tyler play was a pre-Bakken play,
mm-hmm.
and it's important for us to remember. But if you look at the shape of the Tyler, the geological formation of the Tyler, its shape runs to the south and southwest of the Bakken. And what we're seeing now is mineral as the Bakken has become proven reserves, as we've shaped that play up there. What's next? You know, where are you going next? Mm-hmm. Well, what's next, it looks like in North Dakota, is people are mineral rights are being purchased, the activity starting to go to the south and the southwest. The Tyler Formation is more of a horizontal or a straight vertical well drill. The oil is closer to the surface. It's kind of in pools instead of in seams. So it is a little less expensive to extract. But importantly, it moves the activity out of the north and northwest of the state to the south and the southwest. And, you know, the south and the southwest, we've had those plays going on since the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And the infrastructure's more developed, the collection's more developed, the activity, I think, is kind of, we're used to that activity in the marketplace. So it's going to be able to spread out the activity across a wider geographical range in North Dakota, but it's also moving into an area that I think is more manageable and easier for the state to deal with. And so I'm excited about the Tyler play. I think it's really going to be an important economic aspect for the state of North Dakota, and it looks like there's a lot of activity moving that way. Like I said, you know, you're dealing with that 3 to 5 years out, not mm-hmm. tomorrow. But if you look at mineral purchases, you look at, you know, installations, tanking, pipes, storage yards, the stuff that's being
yeah.
rented and built and stuff, it's, you know, it's moving that way. And I think that's an exciting play for North Dakota.
You can see the trends. You can see the trends. Governor Schaefer, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.